Today's program is brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
Hey, 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 I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, and welcome to the Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here today with just Linda. You have an Italian last name. What is it?
Pugliese.
But it's something you just told me you never really pronounced as a child.
No, because nobody ever pronounced it properly. It would be like Puglisi. One time I even got pole juice. I don't know how they got that out of the... I guess when I moved to New York, there are more people around that are, you know, familiar with... Puglia, which is where the name comes from in Italy.
Yeah. So, I mean, you didn't grow up in a large Italian neighborhood.
No. My family, the majority of my extended family in the States is in New York, actually. My dad grew up not far from here in Brooklyn. And both my parents moved to Maryland, which is where I grew up.
Oh, the Chesapeake. So yeah, not right near the Chesapeake. So not Italy.
No. Not even close.
I mean, what I know of it is obviously crabs and Old Bay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, outside of that, isn't there some like beef sandwich, like pit beef, or
I don't know about a beef sandwich. I mean crabs was a big part of my upbringing, which I'm really thankful for. Actually, it's sort of an interesting cultural thing to have, I feel like, in the States. But other than that, it was mostly just, you know, sailboats everywhere. It was I grew up in Annapolis. It's really gorgeous there.
Yeah. I mean, what was your family life like? Was it, you know, very, it sounds nautical, down there, was it full of crabs, or was it more along your Italian heritage?
It was sort of a mix of both. I guess the most, my father was the most food influential. He was on the Italian side, and he always really loved to cook, and my mom didn't and still doesn't really cook all that much. And so my father was always sort of trying to combine crabs and the Maryland way of doing things with his Italian background.
Yeah. What were some of the dishes?
He always really loved to make cioppino, which is like a, you know, the seafood sort of saucy soup sort of thing. I don't know. It changed to soup and sauce sometimes.
Yeah.
And I don't know, crabs. He would actually bring crabs to New York when we would come for the Feast of Seven Fish with our family on Christmas. I remember we would always go and pick up a whole bushel of crabs to lug up to New York City.
Yeah. I think actually I did Feast of Seven Fishes really for the first time this year. Tried to do a crab pasta with Old Bay breadcrumbs.
And, oh, neat.
I mean, it's funny how those things kind of insert themselves into your heritage. You know, you try to take from where you grew up and instill it in whatever, you know, culture or cuisine you're dealing with. And I know your work very well. You're a wonderful commercial photographer. Yeah. But you also have this rooted infatuation with pasta.
Yeah. Which started, I guess 7 or so years ago. So my dad passed away, and I reached out to... He was really, really in touch with everybody, all of our family in Italy, which I have quite a lot. And I reached out to them after his death and found I have this whole new family that I didn't even really know about that was so excited to have me around. And one of my cousins there contacted me to tell me she was moving to New York. And so I offered to have her stay with me for the beginning, and then she would find a place. Turned out she ended up living with me for about a year. And I wanted to make her feel at home. And so I decided, you know, she said she ate pasta every day. So we were going to eat pasta every day. And I just started. And actually, before that, I barely even ever ate pasta.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at holidays and everything. But it wasn't a big part of the diet before.
And we're not talking just like dry extruded. We're talking about fresh pasta.
No,
too.
I'm an overachiever. So every night I was making fresh pasta. So I was, you know, researching it like crazy because you get bored eating the same stuff all the time. And my cousin, I was sort of expecting that she would know, but she knew how to make. So in her town, she's from near Bologna in Emilia-Romagna, and they are known for filled pasta. I mean, it's really the fresh pasta capital of Italy. But she grew up eating like tortellini and brodo and classic tortelli or tortellone with ricotta and spinach. And so she, when her fiance visited, actually, they both taught me how to make tortelloni for the first time, which was really fun. But before that, I was playing with like egg pasta doughs, which I actually was really bad at in the beginning. And through a lot of research and a lot of YouTube videos watching old grandmothers making pasta, I was introduced to the semolina and water dough, which is so much easier to master.
It's like fortified too. It's not a thicker dough, but it just seems much more stable.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you can really mess it up too, and it still works fine. You just like add water to semolina basically until it feels like Play-Doh. You barely even need to knead it. I mean, it depends, you know, if you added a little less water, you need to knead it a little bit more and add a little more, you know, it's very easy to work with.
Do you have a YouTube account that cataloged all the grandmothers that you were watching?
No, I don't.
Because I'd love to see some of those videos because, you know, in this modern day, with technology, we're able to, you know, educate ourselves in a different way. But you've done that, but you've also gone back to Italy.
Yeah. With the YouTube videos, excuse me, I was originally watching them to improve my Italian, and which is, you know, the word, you can't do that with Italian grandmothers because they're all speaking in a dialect. So anyway, that I learned how to make pasta instead. But the speaking of the videos, there is like a Yahoo food article with them all listed, actually, but I could send them to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm sorry, your question about,
you know, I don't know if there was actually a question because I'm pondering all these pasta shapes, and we were talking about Emilia Romana, and you said tortelloni, and I know tortelloni is the large version of tortellini,
yes.
Correct?
Mm-hmm.
There are so many iterations, and it's such a regional thing because
there's,
I think,
so many names
in that area too. It's like
even in the area,
yeah,
like tortelli or capellacci, they'll call it sometimes too.
But like lasagna, I think also comes from that area,
it does.
And like tagliatelle and. So, you know, we think of pasta, or most people think of pasta in the U.S. as, you know, even just birria, you know, it comes in a box. It is, you know, rigatoni, it is penne, it is spaghetti, and that's the limit of it. But you're talking about a small region of Italy.
Yeah. I mean, making filled pasta is a big project, and it's, you know, something you want to do with friends and family. Like in Italy, you know, they all get to, the whole family gets together to make the pasta, and then they like freeze it. And I mean, it's definitely something, I don't know, I feel like Americans are always looking for like the fast thing, which actually semolina and water dough totally is, like to roll out the dough and roll out, you know, cavatelli or acchiette for two in the evening is just as fast as making dried pasta, really. Because it takes like, you know, 10 minutes for the pasta to boil, and takes you 10 minutes to roll it out. It boils in like 1 minute.
Yeah. And plus the more hands you have to help you. I know you've had a couple parties and your friends come over and everyone makes pasta.
Yeah.
And you just stockpile that way.
Yeah. It's fun. It's really enjoyable. It's, I think I was also most attracted to it in the beginning is because it's such a beautiful process, which is sort of how it ended up so much involved in my work.
Yeah. And let's talk about your work because you say beautiful and you're a very visual person. Photography, when did that kind of introduce itself into your life?
Well, I didn't study photography in school. I studied politics because it was the major that I knew least about. And after I graduated, actually my boyfriend at the time was into photography and had this camera that I started playing with, and I actually started a food blog. At the time, I was basically like learning how to cook. I didn't know how to cook at all, but I knew I really liked food, and I just started playing, and I got better and better, and I decided after so long of not knowing really what I wanted to do, I was working like as an executive assistant at a tech company, that I really wanted to get into photography. So I saved up money to live without pay for 6 months. I quit my job and I took an unpaid internship with a fashion and celebrity portrait photographer.
Yeah.
And after that, I ended up getting a job with Tina Rupp, who I worked for, her and her husband Wendell Weber, for about 5 years. And they really helped, you know, they taught me. I was able to, it was really nice to be able to, you know, work and learn. It's wonderful. The industry is so odd how people get in. I feel like it's always a weird, everyone has their own way, if you will. And, I don't know, I was very lucky to find people that were willing to teach me what they needed me to know.
Yeah. And I know Tina and Wendell's work, and it's very, you know, crisp, clean, you know, and something is so starkly in focus, but it's comforting.
Mm.
And your images are similar in a way that they're so inviting. You know, they're not this commercial constructed thing. It feels like we're at your house making pasta with you.
Which especially, so often you are.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially my pasta work is just really, it's probably the, I've collaborated with some stylists, but for the majority of it, it's just all me, you know, in my kitchen playing, basically.
What was that first pasta shape that you made?
Cavatelli was the first one. It's the best introductory pasta shape, I would say. Whenever I'm teaching friends how to make it, it's what I always start with, because it's also like super rewarding, because you additionally learn how to make orecchiette at the same time, because you just have to flip it over.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, let's talk about those two shapes specifically. How do you make cavatelli?
Well, there are several different ways. There are several different types of cavatelli. You can just do it, you know, I've even made it with like 4-year-olds. Anybody can make it. So you like roll out the semolina in a log, basically, you know, the thickness of, I guess, your thumb. And you can shape it with a knife. You know, you cut it into about, I guess, a centimeter. Or you can, you know, the beauty of making fresh pasta by hand is you can choose. So what if you want to make a giant cavatelli because the food, you know, the sauce has large pieces? You can. So you choose the size, obviously, and you roll the knife starting at the very top, which people love to start, like, on the pasta, but you actually have to start before it, or and I think it's best this way. And then you just sort of roll it through with without being afraid to break the pasta, because it's important. You'll get all those tears that grab onto the sauce if you do that. And or, you know, you can use a knife, you can use your finger, you can roll it longer and use all your fingers.
I love that 4-finger one.
Yeah, yeah. The cavatelli lunghi, which is so beautiful. They look like little peas.
Yeah. No, it does. And, you know, that's what's so amazing, that these human imperfections, using your fingers rather than, you know, some mechanized extruder, creates these perfect little nooks and crannies for sauces to adhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's function in all this geometry of pasta. I mean, they're all very intentional shapes for what they're usually paired with.
Yeah, and it's really personal, because, you know, like I was saying before, that you need to start the knife before. That's because it's my preference that it's not too toothsome. If you want the outer edges to be, you know, have more of a bite, you start in the middle and you end a little early so that that part is thicker.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's all about your own personal preference.
And then orecchiette comes from that.
Yes, you know, once you're done, you put your thumb under the bottom and you just sort of like roll it out, invert it, basically.
Yeah. You know what I also love about orecchiette is obviously what it means.
Yeah, little ears.
And there's so much pasta that actually is referencing, you know, a shape in the natural world, in the real world.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, all have a story, practically.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but did you know this entering into pasta, or were you just like, I'm just going to do this shape? And then did you research the history and etymology?
I've been researching, yeah. I mean, it's so endless. I mean, it feels like you can go on and on. Like, even going back to tortelloni, for example, like, I took a class about pasta in general, about egg pasta in Bologna, with my cousin and with two of my cousins. And So I cannot remember the name of the town, but there's in Bologna, there's a very specific way to shape it. And there's a small town outside of Bologna. When you attach the two pieces at the bottom of the tortellone, one is twisted. And they will argue that, you know, one or the other is the right way to do it.
Yeah.
Something so small. It's incredible.
I think there are 20 regions in Italy, so obviously very diverse, you know, from north to south, east mm-hmm. to west, coastal. A very diverse terrain and ingredient base, and obviously, I'm assuming, flowers differ too, you know, from semolinas to barleys. And mm-hmm. so the actual structure of the pasta is different throughout the country. Where did you focus? Where did you start? I mean, was it about doing, you know, decorative shapes, or was it stuffed pastas, or was it long pastas, extruded pastas?
I guess at first it was just about like trying to get it right, get anything right, to be honest. When I finally figured out, you know, got a hang of the semolina and water dough, it was less about researching regions and more about just, I guess, visually, I wanted to create more shapes. So I was researching and trying to find new shapes, not only to make, but to photograph. And with the egg dough, honestly, I only feel like I recently even figured out how to properly make an egg dough when I took that class in Bologna. They made it very clear. I learned a lot of new things about it that I never had known before.
Such as what?
Well, for example, in Italy, they use specifically specific eggs for pasta. There's like pasta eggs that you buy at the store and the regular eggs. And they're a little bit larger. There really are ideal eggs here. They're really bright orange yolks. And the weight in particular, 60 grams. They're almost always 60 grams. So there's 60 grams of eggs and 100 grams. Is that right? I think it's 100 grams of flour, 60 grams of liquid.
Yeah.
And you add a little water if, you know, it doesn't reach 60 grams. And anyway, with that, like for me, I really prefer making pasta by hand. So being able to make it by hand and have it be pleasant was really important to me. And if you screw up the ratio between liquid and flour, it's very easy to get like a gluey dough, or if it's less, a really hard dough to work with. You're sitting there like breaking your back trying to roll out this pasta. And with this particular balance, it's a very pleasant dough to knead.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it becomes more soft. And another thing I thought was so interesting, they told me when you're rolling it out to know when it's done, because, you know, they say you have to roll it out until like what, it bounces back at you or whatever. You can cut it open, you look inside, and you'll notice that it, like a tree trunk, there are all these sort of like lines going around and around that you know, because you're constantly folding it over. But if there are air bubbles left in the dough, it still needs to be, you know, you have to keep going.
Yeah, and that's where the visual aspect of being a photographer plays into the tactile, you know, making pasta dough.
Yeah.
Those two worlds, you know, connect in some way. We're going to actually take a quick break and talk more about fatta in casa, making pasta by hand.
Yes.
You've been listening to The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Tegel. We'll be right back. Hey, and welcome back to The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, with Linda Pugliese. A wonderful pasta by hand expert and fantastic commercial photographer as well. And, you know, it's funny that, the blending of those two words, the tactile and the visual, there was obviously a need in your life to do something that wasn't digital photography per se. And, you know, your cousin introduced herself at the perfect time in your life to kind of have that. Exploring shapes visually, exploring different pastas. Not only is the finished shape beautiful, but the process. And you photograph, you know, from blending the dough, kneading the dough, all these wonderful methods. When you set up a shot, like, how do you conceptualize what is the most beautiful part of pasta making? What is the best angle for that dish?
I think for me, the making of the pasta, the kneading of the dough, the rolling it out, I think for me that's the most beautiful. I don't know why, because it's always this sort of organized mess. It's especially when there are a lot of people making pasta. It's really a big mess. It's beautiful to see how they're shaped also. It's also a way for me to, like, educate people. Maybe it seems silly, but I feel like so many... In America, it's so common to make the egg dough, make tagliatelle, and that's like the end of it, if people want to make fresh pasta. And by showing how it's made, you know, people can realize that, you know, it's really not that difficult. You don't even need any sort of tools, you know.
What tools do you need other than your hands?
Maybe a knife. That's really it. It really is.
Yeah.
I mean, well, it depends. I shouldn't say that. It depends on what type of pasta you're making, but... You know, you don't need anything fancy. You can use, like, a chopstick if you want to make, I can't even think of the one.
Like gamelli or...
I can't think of it. I'm awful. My memory is so bad. So bad. You have
Luckily,
no idea.
You have a website and a blog, you know, fataencasa.tumblr.com to be able to reference.
Yes, which I've been terrible about updating lately. But it has been really nice to sort of catalog everything there. Michael Hranek actually is the one that told me to start that blog.
Yeah.
And I listened to him. He's also a great photographer, and he's an editor at Condé Nast Traveler now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice to be able to put my recipes somewhere, even, you know, even though they are quite simple. I'm always sort of trying to master the simple.
Yeah. So what are you trying to master right now? What are your shapes and sauces?
There's nothing really right now that I'm super focusing on as far as pasta goes. I did actually find a new pasta book recently, which is always something that jumpstarts everything. And I was reading about the history of pasta. I'm such a geek about this
what
stuff.
What is that
I
book?
I've read about it forever. Of course, I can't remember the name. As I told you, my memory is so bad. But it's an older book I picked up in a used bookshop on Mercer Street. Just
yeah.
A few days ago, actually. And it's super interesting. They talk about, you know, how the semolina is made with the endosperm of the kernel and everything, which is something I researched for a while. Yeah, I wanted to mill my own semolina.
The middlings? Is that what they call it? They call it the middlings of durum wheat or something
like
really?
That. Oh, really? I didn't hear that, actually.
Yeah. I've always loved the term the middlings.
Yeah, it's the endosperm. Term.
You know, and that's a great thing. It has such a long history, pasta making. I think
really, yeah.
Neapolitan cuisine goes back to the 4th century, something
oh,
as
yeah,
crazy
it's really
as that.
Old. And they were saying, like, you know, the first pastas were sweet. It was with, like, sugar and spices, and you would eat it with your hands and, like, street food in the streets of Napoli.
Yeah. And now we have such modern shapes and, you know, and flavors as well. But, like radiatore is a radiator, and I believe it was developed in the 1960s by some industrial designer.
Probably,
partially to resemble radiators, mm-hmm. partially to actually, again, have sauce adhere to it better, because a lot of pastas on the market were, you know, kind of flat, you know, and long, linguinis and, you know, cappellinis that were too thin to, you know, have a good pesto or ragu kind of just like mix in there.
Yeah, that's always really important to me, too, which is something, again, that I really love about rolling out your own pasta. You have the opportunity to put all of those, like, tears, you know, so that it'll grab the sauce.
Yeah. So what are some of your favorite, like, complex shapes to make?
It's a very good question. I really like making trofie.
Oh, it's one of my favorite pastas. I have no idea how to make it, though.
It's pretty hard. I think I really love making it because it took me so long to figure out how to do it properly. And you have to sort of take the... What is this? The heel of your pinky and, like, run it along. It's sort of hard to describe with words, to be honest.
Yeah.
But it comes out like a little corkscrew.
Yeah.
And there, though I can't make that much of it, it kills my hand, but it's fun.
Yeah.
Super fun to make. And I think, like, tortelloni I really, really enjoy making, too, just because it's, you know, pretty close to my heart with my family there. They're really my only family in Italy that's regularly making fresh pasta at home.
So, I mean, we touched on Emilia Romagna, a little lasagna tagliatelle there as well. Some of my favorite pastas, I love eggplant, and I've been to Sicily before, and I don't think they even have a real defined pasta shape that's from Sicily that I can think of offhand, but, like, you get alla norma, you get caponata from there.
And I love pasta alla norma.
You know, it needs a specific kind of shape as well to kind of fold into because the chunks of eggplant are big and, you know, too big.
Mm-hmm.
And I bounce back and forth. I'm like, I like it with a thin pasta. No, I like it with a rigatoni and it's all chunky. Do you have any preferences that are outside the norm of, you know, classical Italian pairings?
I mean, I really love it with orecchiette. But for me, I think I almost love everything with orecchiette. I think it's my favorite one.
Yeah. Other shapes like rotelli, wagon wheel, lumache almost feel a little kitschy sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the what are the lumache? The snails.
Yeah.
Mezzalunas, you know, half moons. But at the same time, they must have been developed for a reason at some point in time. Have you ever thought about making your own shape?
I've thought about it. I think it really would involve just sitting there and playing with the dough more than anything.
I feel like most shapes get classified underneath, what is it, malfatti, you know?
Yeah.
Just poorly made.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's sort of, it's hard to answer because, for example, the cavatelli that I really love to make is like a, I feel like my particular cavatelli is different in shape than a lot of other people's cavatelli. And it's for a visual reason.
Yeah.
I really love the ends to be really pointy and it to be more of like an oval sort of vaginal shape. It's not as weird as it is today, but it looks really like that. You know, I don't know. You really have it in your hands to play. And I haven't really made up my own shape, I will say.
Yeah. I've always wondered that. And then you get to go to, you know, the patent office and be like, I have my own pasta now. You know,
there are all sorts of things you could do, you know, in simple things. Like, for example, farfalle, like you could make like a long, I'm sure that somebody's done it. I don't know that I've ever seen it, but like a long, if you take pappardelle, for example, and you just pinch it in several different places, you
yeah.
get like farfalle lunghi. I don't know who made it up.
I actually think farfalle is my favorite shape. You know, it's a little bow tie, but I think it's a butterfly. I mean,
yeah.
But I grew up, you know, in New York and Ashkenazi Jew, and my grandmother would always make kashavarnishka, and kashavarnishka was only with bow ties.
Yeah.
So, like, I grew up just loving bow ties, which then I later found out were butterflies and have this much longer history than this, you know, very, like, buckwheat, grody, comforting Jewish dish.
Yeah, it's a shape that I think I don't make enough. I actually really love it, and especially when it's made fresh, it has this really delicate bite about it.
Yeah. And I mean, so you kind of have to deconstruct to figure out how certain shapes are made, and I don't think I've ever made farfalle, and I can see it as a big rectangle, and you have to cut it on the side so it has that little ribbony effect.
You could, you don't have to.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes...
Just like a flat bow tie.
Yeah, it's so funny because when you mention it, I had forgotten about that part of the farfalle. I always, when I do it, I just cut it into like, you know, stamp size shapes or whatever and squeeze the middle.
And it's that wonderful little pinch.
Yeah.
You know, and I've been to some factories that actually do a lot of extruded pastas and I've never seen farfalle. I mean, I'm sure it happens, obviously, but there's just something special knowing that someone pinched each piece of pasta for you.
Yeah, a friend of mine, this photographer's assistant I used to work with always loved the fact that you could always see, like, for example, in cavatelli lunghi or orecchiette, you could see the fingerprints on every single, you know, you could see where the fingers were in every one. It sort of puts a little bit of love in it.
Yeah. And when you set up these, you know, shots and you show the procedure, which you love, you show the finished dish, how do you make it so it's not, you know, repetitive, not a redundant thing, just a pasta with a sauce in a bowl over and over?
Such a good question. I'm not really sure. I try and make, generally when I'm doing it, I try and do it in a way that it's the person, it's like the chef, you know, the person that's eating it, or the person, excuse me, the person that made it is the one eating it. Like, I did a story for Sweet Paul where I did a filled pasta story, and a lot of the platings are on the same surface that I made the pasta, and there's still flour all over the surface, and I wanted it to be like a, I don't know, like the chef's pasta in a way. And it's sort of a theme, I think, in my a lot of my plated work. I like it to be, because the making of it is my favorite part, I like to have the mess around still there, even with the plated shot.
I mean, let's talk about Italy a little bit more. When you learn certain pastas over there, where would you eat? Formally in another room or in the same kitchen that the pasta shapes were made?
You know, my family in Italy, it is so hard to get them to let me cook with them. It is practically impossible. So it's always in the other room. My family in Emilia-Romagna, I finally get them to let me make pasta with them because they know how much I love it. And I'm very, very close with my cousin that was living with me. Obviously, we're practically like sisters. But I have also a family in Naples and in Sicily, which is actually so wonderful to have them in you know, the south, the middle, and the north, so I can have exposure to all of these different types of food. But it's, I still haven't had the opportunity to really cook with the family in Sicily and Naples.
Yeah. But they know you love it. They follow your blog. We'll send them this episode to try to convince them. We'll have Jack translate the whole thing into Italian for us. Yeah, you could do it. We got the thumbs up on that. You know, pasta is such an inherent, and my wife's going to laugh when I say this, intrinsic part of, you know, our food community, of our food lives. So much so that when we got married, she gave me this this cartoon by Charles Barsotti. From the New Yorker, which I'm assuming you and many listeners might know, but it's a piece of pasta. It's a piece of rigatoni on a phone.
Mm-hmm.
And the caption says, "Fusilli, you crazy bastard, how are you?" And like, it gets me every freaking time. Like, it's one of the, and we have it hanging and I see it and I'm just like, there's this attachment not only to the humor of that, but to pasta in general. Like, we all grew up with macaroni, mm-hmm. with elbows, with, you know, and not that we've taken it for granted, but there's this wonderful exploration that can be had and that you've been going
through. It's such an exploration. I think that's why it like has my interest constantly, because you can never stop learning about the regions, the different names. It really is seemingly endless.
Where else in Italy do you want to travel?
Oh, that's such a good question. I mean, I really want to travel more in Emilia-Romagna. I mean, I was lucky enough to go on assignment for Sweet Paul magazine and see the production of prosciutto and parmigiano and balsamic vinegar. And it just made me want to research even more that area. I thought it would sort of like check it off, but in fact, it made me even more curious. It's just, it's incredible the richness of culture in Italy. I mean, it's just changes from like 10 miles to 10. It's just blows my mind.
Yeah. It's funny. I was making pesto the other day. You know, there, I usually make it with whatever nuts, with whatever herbs even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just,
in fact, I hate making it with basil.
Yeah, me too. I mean,
I prefer parsley.
I like parsley. I like a little bit of mint, you know, kind of like mixing it all together. And I'm just like, this is so Italian. But I'm like, no, this is actually so Ligurian. And I'm like, no, this is absolutely, has nothing to do with that pesto and with that region. This is just, you know, riffing on that. But the ingredients, again, like you talk about Parmigiano, balsamic, being from a specific place, you know, it's funny how regional the food is, but how secular the food is.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible, the regionality. For example, the family in Naples, I remember when I was visiting them from, so when I was on this trip, I stayed a little longer and I spent time in Emilia-Romagna with my cousin, and then we went down to Naples and we brought them this beautiful balsamic vinegar, very expensive, you know, old one. And they like don't know what to do with it because it's not part of their cuisine, you know? I don't even know if they'll ever use it.
Yeah, it's just funny because, you know, we have this expected, we have this assumed pantry in our heads of, mm-hmm. you know, what Italian food is, what goes with pasta. Is it like a ragu? And I mean the brand name ragu sauce, mm-hmm. you know, with birria. I mean, that's what we mainly grew up on here in the States. And just being able to learn how to make it by hand opens up this whole new world. This
I mean, even the sauces, like the simplicity of it. You know, I remember when I was in Sicily a few years ago, my cousin made me this dish, which is today my favorite thing ever. And it's literally made with broccoli and garlic, and that's it. You boil the broccoli, in the words of my cousin, until it's dead, like longer than you would ever boil broccoli.
Oh, I know this well. Yes, yes.
And then you put it in a pan with oil and, well, I also use anchovies. I put anchovies in everything, and garlic. And you mash it down, and you keep adding pasta water until it becomes a sauce, essentially.
Yeah.
And it's so, I don't know, I've always loved broccoli. Everyone always made fun of me when I was a kid for loving broccoli. And, you know, with toasted breadcrumbs with orecchiette. And yeah. It's so delicious.
I think that's exactly how I had it when I was in Sicily, and they kept on calling it affogato.
Oh, really?
And we're like, why is that? It's like, because you drown the shit out of, you know, the broccoli until it's mush. And then,
okay.
But, I mean, where else can you overcook a green vegetable and make it taste that delicious?
Exactly.
It kind of blew my mind. Again, your blog, fataincasa.tumblr.com, but your website, Linda Pugliese, has some stunning imagery.
Thank you.
You've been shooting some cookbooks for really fascinating clients, and I'm just excited to see what you do next, because I know there is a very personal project or cookbook coming in the wings someday. You know, the exploration of your family, your life through pasta, through Italy, and you know, that's why I keep on coming back, because it's just this ever-evolving, you know, opening. It's just kind of a really great life to see unfold.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I really would love to do a book at some point. What it will be yet, I don't really know. but I do have a little, actually, when my cousin was here living with me, we had a little book that we worked on. She really loved to cook, and we were sort of learning together in a way. And it's funny because, so in Italy, the mothers, they really want to keep a tight hold on you. You know, it's the food is the way to keep you coming back. It's to show love, and it's also like a little bit of a leash, I feel like, in a way. And so we would constantly be asking her mother for recipes, and they would always like be wrong. They wouldn't work. and so we were taking her recipe that she sent us and comparing it to this Italian website. It's called Gialozza Ferrano, which I reference really regularly for recipes. And we would take the two recipes and we would sort of combine them and work on them together. And we have this book that we were, you know, writing together in a way to sort of catalog all of these tests that we were doing.
Yeah.
And I've continued to add to it, even though she's no longer around.
Yeah. Well, I would like to see that someday. And like you said, your work keeps me coming back in the same way that the misinformation of a mother or grandmother not giving you the right way to make a dish does. So thank you. And everyone should check out Linda's work and make pasta by hand. God damn it. God
Please.
Damn it. You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. Hoping to have you back here next Thursday, Tuesday at 3. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.